And there's a lot going on at naturalnurse.com. Just going to tell you some of the events that are coming up right now. And you can just go to naturalnurse.com on the top click calendar, and you can find the remedy, Ancient Medicine for Modern Illness. It's a docuseries made by the organization Sacred Science, really well produced, and it is 100% free. All you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com calendar or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We have it posted there as well. And it's called Remedy, Ancient Medicine for Modern Illness, a docuseries. If you click on that, you're able to register 100% free. And I am featured along with other top herbalists, quite a number of us who you probably know, many of whom who have been my guests right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And it's basically about herbal medicine, exactly what herbs you can use to help yourself, both for overall health and wellness and for specific serious illnesses like neurodegenerative disease and MS, Lyme's, diabetes, heart disease, cancer. How can herbs help? Also, with things that you might be facing, such as chronic pain. Of course, we have a full book about that called Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. Stress and anxiety, insomnia, fatigue, really, really excellent, excellent remedy. It has over 17,000 peer-reviewed scientific papers on all of these herbs, which the many clinical herbalists, including myself, present in this free docuseries. So I do suggest that everyone take advantage of this. Very rare that something like this is available for free. It will be premiering September 5th through 13th. Each of those days will be a different hour-long presentation, and you will get a link to just join in for free. And you can go anytime. If the time that it first airs does not work for you, you can revisit the link and come back and watch it. So it is called Remedy, Ancient Medicine for Modern Illness, and that is the first thing posted right now at naturalnurse.com calendar. We also have next weekend the Imagine Music and Arts Festival, and that is, for those of you on the West Coast, in Orcas Island, Washington. We're in the San Juan Islands, and I will be one of the main presenters there, and there's many other wonderful presentations as well. I'll be talking about there, actually, herbalism and interspecies communication with plants, both spiritual teachings and the latest science. We also have an online webinar in September called Cycles of Life, Women's Wellness Naturally, and that has 3 CE credits for health professionals such as nurses, midwives, registered dietitians, and massage therapists. However, it is open to anyone, so you can get a certificate for taking it, or you can get 3 CE credits if you need them for your health professional license. And that's called Cycles of Life, Women's Wellness Naturally. That's online, so anyone can join us. It's on September 12th, 6:30 p.m. online. And then we have another on-ground presentation, which is our Chinatown Herb Walk. Dr. Zamperone and I have been doing the Chinatown Herb Walk. This is our 40th year, believe it or not, our 40th year. We do twice a year. So this will be our 80th presentation of our Chinatown Herb Walk. So I think we have a lot of experience in this area. And if you've ever wanted to explore Chinatown but didn't know the right way to go about it, also, we have things that you will never experience anywhere else, such as an underground visit to an FDA facility in, I'll say, the bowels of Chinatown. We actually go underground to visit with people who present there. So you're welcome to join us, and please do get in touch, naturalnurse.com. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Stephen Schmiff, and we'll call him Dr. Stephen. He is a medical doctor, and he's an internist, professor of medicine, as well as public health, and was formerly the CEO of the University of Maryland Medical Center. Dr. Stephen has written 5 books, that's for a general audience, along with his many, many publications for the medical audience. And I think the first one was called The Future of Medicine, Megatrends in Healthcare, which was absolutely groundbreaking. I remember when it came out. It focused on genomics, vaccines, technology, stem cell technology, which, of course, you're hearing a lot about now, and information management, which, again, was cutting edge at that time. So Dr. Stephen has always been a visionary for the future. Today we're going to talk about his book, Longevity Decoded, The 7 Keys to Healthy Aging. So thank you so much, Dr. Stephen, for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Pleased to be here.
Now, let's go back in time a little bit. So you obviously are a medical doctor who actually treated people, but you are actually, let's say, a visionary researcher. Would you say that that's something that you do?
I should let you say that, but I think it's
okay. But you'll agree. I mean, you haven't only focused on producing works that just were about just health. It goes way beyond that. Like something like genomics and information management, which I remember reading about in your book, The Future of Medicine, that was not even being practiced at the time.
No, it wasn't, and it was really just at the beginning. One thing that wasn't in that book, because it came out just the year the book came out, was the iPhone. And, you know, all the things that you can do with the apps on the iPhone. So I've always felt like I should go back and rewrite the book and put a new chapter in, because that's made such a huge change. But, yeah, you're right. Information management, genomics, which has had just an enormous effect over the last 10, 12 years, and it's going to have more. And stem cells, which were just kind of beginning, but now they're... Well, we still have a lot to go with stem cells, but you're right. And vaccines, new vaccines, new approaches in the operating room, it's really quite amazing.
Well, you certainly could and should do, Dr. Stephen, because of your cutting-edge research over so many decades, The Future of Medicine Revisited. You know, we're in a new century now, and just like you said, every one of those things you discussed did come into being, and of course, so much more about them
now. What we can all do for ourselves to improve our health and wellness, and it's prompting me to team up with a friend to write a book, and also another book of my own that I'm kind of half done with called The 21st Century Plague, which of course is all our chronic diseases, which are, I hate to say it this way, but they're kind of self-induced because it's related to, you know, how we live our lives.
Well, I think, though, to me, when we look at the clear science in terms of what you just said, that so many degenerative illnesses are actually self-induced, I don't feel that that's a negative thing. I think that's really exciting because it also means through your own actions, you can sort of choose a very high percentage of not getting it.
Absolutely. But, you know, I just don't want to imply blame because I think blame, turns people the wrong way. When I was actively practicing medicine, I never told a patient with lung cancer, gee, you shouldn't have smoked.
And right, right.
But anyway, but I do want to tell a 20-year-old, don't smoke, because if you do, you're on average, you're going to die 12 years, if you're a male, 12 years sooner than your friends who don't smoke. And for a woman, 11 years. That's a decade of life lost. Unfortunately, people don't smoke as much anymore, but there's still, 17, 20% who do. Anyway, I'm off on the side, and I don't mean to preach.
No, that's excellent. And it is interesting because as a nurse, and I became a nurse in 1973, and I've been doing holistic medicine since 1964, so quite a while. But when I first became a young nurse, the nurses, and I know you know this is true, smoked right at the nurse's station.
Oh, yeah.
And in the break room.
And when we decided to make our hospital smoke-free, the nurses in the ORs complained vociferously. They said, we can't leave to go outside to smoke because we're stuck here in our scrub suits. So this isn't fair.
So it's not that long ago. So what I'm saying is with knowledge, people think if they are a 20-year-old today, like you said, that things have always been this way. They haven't been this way. They have changed. And it's not that long ago if you and I remember it and we're here talking about it.
That's absolutely right. Of course, so we don't smoke as much now, but we sit a lot. And I think it's fair to say sitting is the new smoking.
Yes. Why don't we talk about that?
Okay.
I know you talk about exercise in your book, Longevity Decoded. And how important is that?
Well, maybe should we back up just for a second?
Absolutely.
And maybe put this in context. If there's really one point I'd like to make today to your audience, it's that each of us, each of you out there, has it in your own power to affect your health and wellness. Now, I know this is things you talk about all the time on your program, but I just want to emphasize it, that we have within ourselves that power. It's kind of like going to the light switch. You can turn the light on or turn it off. It's up to us. It's our finger in the switch. And, of course, that's an easy thing to do, and sometimes changing our lifestyles isn't so easy because they're longstanding habits, and it's been going on for years and years. But if we would like to live a longer time, if we'd like to live without a lot of chronic diseases, we won't live forever, and there's no guarantee we won't get any illnesses, but we can certainly make a huge difference in our lives. We can actually literally slow the aging process and prevent and delay the onset of chronic diseases by simply looking at our lifestyles, and of course exercise is one of them.
That's so true. What you said is very interesting. I think there's no guarantee for how long you will live. Myself have interacted with some people who are living, let's say, what we used to call, and you'll remember, nursing homes. Now that's not a politically correct word anymore. I think it's now called something else.
Yeah, long-term care.
Whatever. But there are people in there who wake up every day and said to me, nurse, why am I still alive? I don't want to live anymore. They're not happy. And then other people, of course, could be young and healthy and an athlete and go out in a minute. But so it's not so much that, because those are playing the odds, you might last a long time. But it's more like, if you do live a long time, how about having a usable vehicle to be living your life in?
Oh, you're right on target. And I think that's what we all want. And if we get toward those later years and find out that, we've got a bunch of chronic illnesses, and we say, gee, how did I get here? And I don't like this. Whereas if we've got to start young, although it's never too late to start, I will say, but best if we start young with these basics of our diet, our exercise, and stress management, getting a good night's sleep, no tobacco, of course. And, of course, our brains need to be challenged, and we're humans. We need to interact with others. Those are what I call the seven keys, and they're not that hard.
Why don't we go through those seven keys? That's very important, and that's the name of your book, Longevity Decoded, The Seven Keys to Healthy Aging. And then you have a lovely key on the book with a picture of each of the seven keys.
Yes, a good friend who's a graphic designer did that for me, and I really appreciate it.
So what are the seven keys?
Well, I just listed them. I'll list them again, and when we go through them one by one, it's what we eat, what we put through, it's on the end of our fork and goes into our mouth. That's really number one on the list. Number two is how we move, exercise. Number three is stress, chronic stress. Number four is sleep. Number five is tobacco, and we can skip over that one easily, just say none. Number six is to help our brains, which is intellectual challenges. And number seven is social engagement. We're humans. We need to interact with others. But if we want to go back to diet, I hate to use the word diet. I'm going to use it anyway, but I hate to use that word because it sort of implies, you know, some funny thing to try and take off 18 pounds in 2 weeks or something. And that's not what I mean here. I'm talking about a lifelong approach to how we eat. And to me, let me go back a little bit. What do us Americans tend to eat right now? We eat, on average, 154 pounds of sugar a year. And if you put that into five-pound bags, that would be 30-plus five-pound bags. Lay those on your kitchen table and say, my God, I can't possibly be eating that much sugar. But, of course, if you're not, then somebody else is, because that's the average. And sugar's in everything. It's in sodas, of course. It's in cakes, pies, cookies, pastries. It's in our breakfast cereal. It's in our ice cream. We think we're getting something healthy by buying some fruit yogurt. And if you look at the package label, though, you find out they have added sugar in that. So sugar's all over the place. And sugar's not good for us.
That's a very small change that people can do. I certainly tell all my patients what you just said, Dr. Stephen, is read your label. So something like yogurt, since you brought it up.
Yeah.
It's very easy to buy yogurt plain, and if that makes you go yuck, which I actually love it plain, you just add your own fruit, which is a completely different thing than the jam and sugar that they add when you buy a flavored yogurt.
You bet. And there's so many things like that we don't even think about. So you need to read the labels. And fortunately, labels are on just about everything now. And look in the back, and it'll say how many grams of sugar. And they're starting also now to add grams of added sugar. You know, so a pear has natural sugars in it. But what we're interested in is added sugars. So a woman should have no more than, I think it's 25 grams of sugar, added sugar a day, and a man no more than about 35. But one can of soda has 37 grams. So we're right up there with one can of soda, and we know lots of people have multiple cans of soda or one much larger can, or you go to the fast food restaurant and you get a big gulp, and just imagine the amount of sugar that's in that. So sugar's all over the place, and we do really need to read those labels.
And what kind of negative effects would eating a whole bunch of sugar like that have?
I shouldn't get into too much biochemistry here, but just quickly, sugar, white sugar, table sugar, breaks down into two parts, glucose and fructose. And fructose eventually gets converted to glucose in our bodies. And glucose is the basic energy builder for our cells. And so it's necessary, it's needed. But our cells only need so much. And if we're sitting, it needs even less. So what extra sugar comes in from our diet, first of all, gets stored in the liver. And that's fine, because then when you're not eating, it can come out of the liver and go to your muscles, your brain, and so on. But once the liver's full, then it gets stored in our bellies and fat cells. And that's the reason why we have an epidemic of obesity. Many people think it's because they eat too much fat. That's not the reason. It's because they eat too much sugar. And the sugar goes, it's excess sugar. There's no place to put it. So it goes in our body and makes it into fat. So it's a little different than what most people think, but that's just exactly what happens. And it's this excess sugar that's causing all the obesity in our country. So that's part of the problem. The other thing is white flour. White flour has very little nutritional value, but when it's digested in the intestines, it is digested down to glucose, sugar. And so when we have that nice pastry, which has both sugar and white flour, we're getting a double whammy. We're getting the direct sugar, plus we're getting the sugar that's the breakdown product of the flour. So we're putting a lot of pressure on our bodies to deal with this stuff, and it's doing what it's supposed to do. It stores it. And, you know, back when food wasn't always available, back in our deep, dark past, storing a little bit of fat for the winter was not a bad idea. But we only need so much. And we have, you know, the rare person in this country that doesn't have some food to eat. So we don't need a lot of fat on our bodies.
So you're saying those are some very sort of initial and easier interventions. And one thing you mentioned before, Dr. Stephen, and we're talking today to Dr. Stephen Schmiff, and he is a medical doctor and the author of many books. And today we're talking about Longevity Decoded, the 7 Keys to Healthy Aging. You did mention that it's never too late to start. That's thought-provoking.
No,
what if people go, I'm 78 already, what, you know, forget it.
Well, I'm 77, and it's not too late. It's never too late. I'll tell you for myself that, you know, I like to go to McDonald's, and I like potato chips, and I like ice cream. I'm like everybody else. But I've got a wife who really watches out for me, and she's a very good cook, And like I said, we do all the things I just mentioned, but we try and do it in moderation, not too often, and make it a treat as opposed to a daily event. And I think that's pretty important. So what is a good diet? A good diet is a lot, and everybody knows this, of course, but everybody should remember that we should eat a lot of vegetables, all different kinds, many different colors, always including some green, I'll call them green dark leafies like spinach, kale, arugula, collards, dandelion greens. So we need some of those every day, plus a mixture of others. And we look at our plate for dinner, say, that plate should be two-thirds covered with vegetables. And that's not the way we usually think of dinner. We usually think of a nice slab of meat and a few vegetables, and we call them sides. But we really should think about vegetables as the main event, and everything else is the sides, if you will. So anyway, we need lots of vegetables every day. We need some fruit every day. Of course, fruit's great. It tastes good. And best in both cases, if it's local, if it's fresh, and even better if it's organic. Then some other healthy things that we can eat almost to as much as we want. Good oils in them are nuts and seeds, and avocados. You know, have an avocado every day. Right now, they're very expensive, though. Olive oil is probably the best oil to use. We shouldn't use vegetable oils, you know, like corn oil, canola oil, and so on. So that's kind of the basic parts of the diet. Then for proteins, and I should have mentioned beans and lentils are very healthy. So that's kind of at the base of a pyramid, if you will. Then go up the pyramid a little bit, should be fish, preferably wild-caught rather than farm-raised, but they'll be more expensive, but they're probably healthier for us. And they have all those good omega-3 fatty acids that we hear about all the time, which are great for our heart and important in other organs as well. And then next up is poultry and dairy. And eggs are fine. People used to think that it wasn't good to eat eggs, but actually they're very healthy. Best, however, if they're from chickens that were allowed to run around outside and pecking the dirt a little bit. And we were fortunate that we spend our summers in a little village sort of in the mountains of West Virginia. And there's a person who has his farm, and his chickens run out all around the backyard. And we buy eggs from him, and those egg yolks are—they're not yellow; they're orange. And
I know. I have raised my own chickens. Well, we're going to take a little break right here.
Okay.
I'm the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and I'd like to remind our listeners today's a good day to visit naturalnurse.com and click on calendar, because there are so many free events and online events and all kinds of classes coming up in the next few weeks. The first thing you'll see there is Remedy, which is a docu-series about herbal medicine. I am one of the people interviewed, along with many of the top herbalists in the United States. So click on that and sign up for free. Today we have as our guest Dr. Stephen Schmiff. We're talking about his book, He's got lots of books, but today we're talking about Longevity Decoded, the 7 Keys to Healthy Aging. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back once again. Natural Nurse and Dr. Progressive Radio Network. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And as always, myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Samperone, we are wishing you the best. And, you know, we give you lots of, you know, free information here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We have our wonderful guest today, Dr. Stephen Schmidt, talking about his book, Longevity Decoded. And there are many, many shows right here on PRN where you can keep up on all kinds of progressive and interesting issues. But it would really be thoughtful if you would like to donate to the station, because, of course, carrying the signal and, you know, sending out all the equipment that is needed is costly. And Gary Null, who runs Progressive Radio Network, rarely does this, but he is asking us just to suggest that you visit prn.fm. There's a big donate button there. You could sign up for a monthly donation. You could make a one-time donation, but we would like to have your input. And we're so happy that we have thousands of people. In fact, we have about 300,000 downloads of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So we're so happy to have your participation. And you can always visit us at naturalnurse.com as well. Our guest today is Dr. Stephen Schmidt, medical doctor, internist, professor of medicine and public health, and has a long list of publications, both professional and for the public, including the groundbreaking, and I remember at the time when this book came out, The Future of Medicine, Megatrends in Healthcare, where Dr. Schmidt brought to the public's attention and to professionals genomics and things like information management. Those were new terms when he brought that to the public, and they have completely proved themselves to be not only cutting edge, but mainstream at this point in time. So very visionary. Today we're talking about his book, Longevity Decoded, The Seven Keys to Healthy Aging. And many of these things you might have heard before, but as we know, Dr. Stephen Schmidt is an amazing researcher, and he is bringing you the latest information. How about this, Dr. Schmidt? First of all, I'd like to share that my own parents, who are like 90s, running around, really do a lot of the seven keys that you're talking about. And I don't think they began life saying they're doing that to live long. And, you know, also, is my parents, they're not related to each other genetically, right? Right. They're not at all. And they're even from very different backgrounds. And yet, it has worked for them. And they say the biggest thing is not sitting. They don't sit. You can never find them in a chair, except maybe 11 o'clock at night. They do drink alcohol, by the way, not a lot, but two drinks a day, which has now been linked to longevity. And they don't care about, you know, if things are necessarily organic. They don't look into all that like I do. But they just eat whole food and very little.
Well, I think you just hit it, whole food and very little. Or not little, but they don't overdo it.
No, they eat
enough,
very little. Like
much.
If they go to a restaurant, they're also small people, very small people, and they actually will split a meal in every restaurant. When they walk in, the restaurant owners know that. If they want their business and they eat out often, they have to allow them to split a meal.
Yeah.
And they don't do that for the sake of longevity. It just seems to have really worked for them.
Yeah, my wife and I do the same thing, and we find we leave the restaurant not feeling satiated, but, you know, adequate, and we feel a lot better. We don't, you know.
Right, not feeling stuffed, because then you're going to go home and try to sleep.
You got it.
So it really has worked. I am so grateful for my parents, who I can never find home. If you call them, it says, sorry, we're swimming or dancing, clunk. And if you come to their house, which that just talks about the socialization that you get into. They have an open house happy hour every day at 5 p.m. And they just invite whoever, people who they meet on the beach. But they have one rule. You can come there. You can tell dirty jokes. But you cannot talk about your doctor visits.
That's good. That's good.
So all those things really add up to what you're saying has actually been proven. What about what I get from many patients, and I'm sure you have heard as well, is that the information seems to change every day. like 1 minute eggs are bad, 1 minute coffee is bad, and, you know, a few years later, they're touted as the longevity specialty.
Well, I guess the first thing to say is that science is science, and as we progress, we always learn new things, and sometimes stuff gets suggested that maybe wasn't based on that good of science. And I'll give you a great example. Back in the 1950s, heart attacks were starting to climb in frequency. No one knew just why. And it became a concern that they were climbing because we were eating too much fat, especially too much saturated fat, too much butter, too many eggs, too much cholesterol. So the recommendation came out, we got to cut back. Don't eat red meat. Don't eat eggs. Don't drink whole milk. Use vegetable oils as your form of oil. That would include margarine. Well, and that was based on what I'll call association studies. The researcher who did this first came out with this was a physiologist named Ansel Keys, Dr. Keys, and I'm sure he was doing what he thought was right, but he proposed that, or he looked at a series of countries and said, look, these countries that don't eat saturated fats have a lower incidence of heart disease. Trouble is, later on we learn, so that's an association study, you know, why this A doesn't necessarily equal B, but at least it's interesting and worthy of study. Well, come to find out, if you looked at more countries, then it doesn't hold up. And today we know that what's happened is everybody's heard about omega-3 fatty acids and why they're valuable and they're good for us. And they're found in fish and they're nuts and seeds and we should have more of those. The other kind of fatty acid that we need, but not as much, not too much of, is omega-6s. And omega-6s are found in vegetable oils. And they're also found in red meat where the steer has been sent to the feeding lot and been fed a lot of corn and soybeans and gets fattened up. And that fat that we see is omega-6 fats. Anyway, it used to be that our body ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s was maybe 1-to-1 or even up as much as 3-to-1. But today, it's more like 20-to-1. Because what we've done is we've switched from the type of diet we had before to one in which we don't eat as much omega-3 fatty acids and we eat a lot more omega-6s with all of our vegetable oils. And the vegetable oils are in things like those nice french fries that we like and potato chips. They're what are in all those pastries and all the junk food you buy in the store that tastes so good. You know, those are all just a combination of sugar, flour, and vegetable oils. So we've just changed our diet so much in the last 50 years, and it's just unfortunate. But it is in part based on information that just wasn't correct at the time.
And that still seems to be an on-again, off-again, because I believe there was a very recent study, maybe last month, that came out, which is, again, going after saturated fats, particularly something like coconut oil. And, of course, coconut oil has various kinds on the market. It has whole, organic, non-processed, and then it has the highly processed kind. And I think they have very different compositions in terms of their bond strength. We're not going to go into all that here. But it seems to be once again being discussed in this study to not eat saturated fats and go back to the, like, safflower and sunflower oil. So it seems to be a ping pong.
Yeah, and I think someday we'll find out what the right answer is.
Well, I really think whole unprocessed is a good right answer. Those margarine kinds of fats are highly processed.
Yes, that's exactly right. So eat more fish, eat more nuts and seeds, use olive oil, avocados, and enjoy. But again, like you said before with your parents, don't eat too much.
And that's a big problem. not in many parts of the world, but certainly in the U.S. And, you know, that Super Size Me, that's a great movie where they actually visited that whole concept of more is better. And then when you get something, you know, low quality like fast food, and then you're getting to eat more and more of it, is definitely, certainly that's something you're choosing that's probably not going to work so well for you later on.
Yeah, you know, when we go to a fast food restaurant, they want us to buy either a McDouble or a large fries or a large soda. And just I learned this a number of years ago, that in a restaurant like that, the food, the cost of the actual food is about 20% of their costs. Most of their costs are going to be for labor and for rent. And so let's just say 20% goes for the food. And to make this easy, we'll say that 10% goes for profit. It's probably not that high, but let's just say 10% for profit. And let's also say that a hamburger costs a buck, French fries cost a dollar, and a Coke, or just let's say a soda, costs a dollar. I won't put a brand name on it. So what they figure is, look, we could offer you a double, but we'll only charge you $1.50 for it. So you have a double hamburger, a large fry, and a large soda, and we'll only charge you $1.50 for each. So instead of spending $3, you're going to spend $4.50. And you say, wow, that's a bargain. I'm getting twice as much, but I'm only paying 50% more. But let's look at what they're getting. The extra hamburger cost them 20 cents, but they're getting 50 cents. Probably no more work involved, and they use the same wrapper to wrap it up in. The French fries, so it costs them, again, another 20 cents, probably not that much, but anyway, another 20 cents, but they're getting 30 cents of profit. And the soda, same thing. So now they're getting 30, 30, 30, that's 90 cents, plus the original 30 cents on the first time. So they're getting $1.20 profit when before they were getting 30 cents profit. So any wonder that they want us to get, you know, a large fry, a double hamburger, and a large soda? Good marketing on their part. We think we're getting a bargain, and instead we're getting fat.
Well, you know, there's a couple of very specific things that perhaps you can help our listeners with, Dr. Stephen, author of Longevity Decoded, The 7 Keys to Healthy Aging. For instance, two that people do know about that seems to come no matter what you do is cognitive decline, so much so that it's almost a joke talking about a senior moment. And I know I myself have had those. It's really shocking when they first start happening.
Yes. So every organ of our body, I'm going to make this a longer answer than you probably want, but anyway, every organ of our body, starting when we're in our young adulthood, declines at a rate of about 1% per year. We don't notice it initially. So our bone strength, our muscle mass, our cognitive abilities, and everything else is declining about 1% a year. So if we live long enough at 1%, we're going to start noticing the effect at some point. So like many people develop osteoporosis because that 1% is catching up with them. And the same thing with cognition. So that 1%, of course, that's an average, and it's going to vary from person to person, time to time, place to place. But it's 1%. We can slow that down quite a bit with the 7 keys that we've been talking about. We've talked mostly about diet. We've talked a little bit about exercise. We haven't talked about all the others too much. But that's what we need to do. And we both talked about before, it's never too late to start. But if we start when we're young, a young adult, it's kind of like it compounds. The value compounds, just like saving money for retirement compounds over time. Better to start young than try and catch up later. And so my suggestion, my admonition, whatever you want to call it, is try and start young with these lifestyle changes, and it's going to make a huge difference in whether or not you're going to start getting that cognitive decline at 60, at 70, at 80, at 90, or maybe not too much at all. My wife had an uncle who died at 102, and he was sharp as a tack until shortly before he died. But he followed all these things. It was just his natural way.
Yes, that's the thing, too. You know, there's genetic differences as well that
sure.
You can't really predict. Well, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with the, you know, brilliant and renowned, he said I can say it even if he won't say it, Dr. Stephen Schmidt, medical doctor, longtime advocate of healthy living, and we're talking about his book, Longevity Decoded, The 7 Keys to Healthy Aging. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Very easy to find, Longevity Decoded, which has all of the tips really beautifully laid out that you can follow, the 7 keys to healthy aging. And one thing that Dr. Smith has mentioned a couple times is don't think you're too old to start. That's the important thing. So what are some of the things someone could do to actually stop that brain decline, that cognition decline that seems to hit everyone at some point? Hello, is Dr. Stephen there?
We lost them. Just keep talking.
Okay, so we'll talk. I will talk about some of those things that I know is really, really excellent. One thing that I tell many of my clients who want to support really great brain health is there are several herbs that can definitely help, and one is called huperzine. That's H-U-P-E-R-Z-I-N-E. And the name of the plant is Hypersia serrata. It's the leaf that is used, and it has actually been studied to support circulation in the brain, and it's one of those things that you can really feel the difference in. So that's something I would suggest. There are many other things you've probably heard about ginkgo biloba. Well, ginkgo biloba is having some studies showing it helps, some that it doesn't help. I think it definitely does help. If nothing else, it's really, really high in various kinds of bioflavonoids, which help with the flexibility of brain tissue. And that's one of the things that Dr. Stephen does describe in Longevity Decoded. He talks about brain plasticity, because the brain is not just a computer or hardware. It actually is living tissue, and there are circuits within it. The damage to the tissues happens by a buildup of various really toxic products over time. And what you want to do is keep the brain stimulated. So one thing you want to do is actually try to increase the healthy foods that you have, the bioflavonoids that you have with fruits such as blueberries, and there are supplements that can help. Another thing that I definitely advocate both for myself and others in terms of exercise, very specifically to help the brain, there are two. One that I love to use is a rebounder. A rebounder is a little mini trampoline that you jump up and down on. And what that does, of course, is move your brain right within the brain cavity. Because when they look at people that have various problems with cognition, they know that very often there is buildup in the brain of various toxins. In fact, Dr. Zamperone and I are actually involved in writing a book at this moment on Alzheimer's, and we won't announce that yet, but it's like coming down the pike. It's in the works, and we talk about a lot of these things. So by using flavonoids in colorful fruits and vegetables and exercise such as a rebounder where you jump up and down, which actually moves your brain right within your head, you know, so it moves it around. It sort of flushes the fluids. Another great one for flushing fluids is using a slant board. Okay, a slant board. And in a slant board, you can use either a slant board if you have them, or you can use an ironing board. An ironing board is a great tool for increasing circulation to the brain, and I'll tell you how. A lot of people have an ironing board. They don't use it anymore because they don't iron their clothes anymore, but an ironing board, you can just prop it up on something that isn't very too high, like a low chair, and then you want to lay on the ironing board. By the way, if you're elderly or if you haven't done this before, make sure you do this when someone is around, a friend or, you know, someone else is around, okay? And you lay on the ironing board with your head down and your feet up. Just think about what that does. It's not the same as laying against the wall and just putting your legs up. That's good too. But for this, you want to actually increase circulation to your brain by allowing the blood to gently flow there. And I do believe we have Dr. Smith back. So welcome back, Dr. Smith. Two more right here on The Natural Nurse.
Okay, well, thanks so much. You know,
we were talking about a little brain health, and you can continue. Like, tell us about DHA.
Well, just I want to go back to one thing that just before the break you mentioned genetics,
okay.
And I just want to make a point to everybody that yes, we have our genes, and they're important to us, and they can predispose us to various illnesses, but predisposition is not the same as destiny, and so we have a lot of control over whether or not that genetic predisposition is actually going to lead to a disease. We were talking about Alzheimer's disease, for example, and there are genes like the APO gene that can predispose to Alzheimer's. But if we're paying attention to these seven keys again, we can really affect those genes not to turn on and cause trouble. So I just wanted to point that out. But DHA is one of those substances which is very important for brain health, and it's found in omega-3 fatty acids. So that's another reason why we need to eat them, or, you know, use supplements. And it's really quite important for us.
Yeah, so there's things we can do. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You're not just sort of, well, that's it. You know, you're going to get old and you can't do anything about it. And, you know, your mother had this illness, so it's genetically locked in. What we're finding is these things are variable. I really love the DASH diet because, you know, the DASH diet is supported by lots of mainstream organizations, including the American Cancer Association, the American Diabetes Association. So that's interesting because the same diet is actually good for your overall body and does decrease your incidence of any of those degenerative illnesses. They're really all linked together. And as you probably know, Dr. Bernard Jensen, who I studied under, and many of the people into natural living way back when, even Dr. Kellogg, really thought that there was not so much this focus on individual diseases and coding for insurance, but just healthy living that avoids all of the above.
Oh, you're so right on target. And I don't want to get off on one of my other preaching things here, but one of the
problems... Well, you can, doctor, and this is the place to do it.
One of the problems with American healthcare now is that, first of all, office visits are very short because of insurance reasons, and they're often just 8 to 10, 12 minutes, which isn't enough time. Certainly not enough time to talk about lifestyle issues. So you go to the doctor with, let's just make something up, you have reflux. Seems like everybody in America has reflux nowadays. And so the doctor does a little history and exam and then gives you a prescription for something like Nexium. Okay, well, that'll help. But if there was more time, maybe we would have had a discussion about, gee, maybe you shouldn't have coffee so late in the evening. Maybe you shouldn't have alcohol so late in the evening. Maybe you want to change your diet a bit. Maybe you want to eat, wait about 3 hours after your meal before you go to bed at night. Maybe you want to jack the head of your bed up because then the acid can't run uphill. All these little things that are just, you know, lifestyle changes can make all the difference, and skip the pill. But what's happened, I think, and it's human nature, of course, is, gee, I don't want to do all those changes. Let me have the pill. That'll be just fine. And that's unfortunate.
Well, it also would be nice if it worked. I mean, it was sort of a promise of modern medicine, which I don't think has panned out in terms of the studies showing that it really led to increased wellness, although you might be able to subdue a symptom.
Yeah, so we focus on, let's take another example. Person comes in, let's just say it's a guy who's 55 years old, and his wife says to him, you got to go to the doctor. You haven't been to the doctor in years and years and years. So he says, oh, okay, I'll go. And so he goes, and they find out that, he has high blood pressure, he has his blood sugars up, and his cholesterol's up. And so he ends up leaving the office with three prescriptions, one for his cholesterol, one for his blood pressure, one for his blood sugar. But the real problem, which wasn't addressed, is that his weight is much too big. He's 6 feet tall, which is 72 inches, but his waist is 38 inches. And the waist size should never be more than one half of the height. So he's just much too big. And that's where the issue has to be. But dealing with that's more difficult. You got to really talk to him about his lifestyles and about what he eats, and that's going to take some time, and maybe he needs to go see a nutritionist and some other things.
Well, this is true, but we have come to the end of our time together, Dr. Smith. Thank you so much for sharing so much knowledge with us today, and I love your book, Longevity Decoded, The 7 Keys to Healthy Aging, and look forward to your new publications that are coming. So for our listeners, I want to thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Go to naturalnurse.com under calendar. Sign up for any of the classes that we have coming up. And until next time, we're so happy to say, stay healthy.